The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
To Hunter, and he'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here in Houston, hoping you're all staying safe. Practice the social distancing. Learn a few things while you're isolated at home. Not getting preachy here, but our next guest is from an area of the country where COVID-19 is absolutely blowing up. But he is a great friend. I've had the pleasure of doing broadcasts with him. He is the former New York Cosmos goalkeeper. Lots of great things we can talk about with him tonight in the next two segments. Was on those great New York Arrows teams in the Major Indoor Soccer League, winning four titles there. Soccer Bowl champion with the New York Cosmos. It goes on and on with Shep Messing. He joins us now. Shep, how are you?
Hey, Glenn, buddy. You know you're the only guy I come out of hiding for. So always a pleasure to hear you, to be with you on your show.
By the way, my friend who is with this company called Europvin, Kirk, who helped put together that Spanish selection for you, he said, you got to make sure you ask Shep about the red wine and if he liked it.
Well, you tell him I polished it off in about 3 weeks, and it was one of the most superb cases of wine I've ever had. So, thanks, my man. Awesome.
Yeah, well, that was good that your son verified that, too, because I guess he knows his wine.
No, he was Googling the labels, the price. He went through everything. So I just sat back and enjoyed.
Yeah, it's like me the other night. I was like, you know, I haven't had a pizza in a while. So I order a pizza, and I'm like, okay, I'm pulling out some red wine here. And wow, this looks good, and it's a Spanish bottle, and I know it's a good bottle. And then I'm drinking it, and I'm going, wow, this is really good. So I did the same thing with the label. It's like an $85 bottle of wine I'm knocking back by myself. And I was like, oh, well, somebody's got to do it, right?
I'm with you, brother.
Yeah, let's just before we get into some really great things here with you, just give me the vibe and give my listeners the vibe about the East Coast right now, around the virus and all. And I don't want to stay on it too long, but it's kind of hard not to at least get your sort of feel about what's going on up there, because it's horrible.
Yeah, Glenn, you know, we can't talk about soccer or anything else until we at least talk about this. And I heard your interview you did with your nephew, who obviously got the virus. I think he got it in Milan, came back and spoke firsthand. You interviewed him about it. It's a horror show. About 10 minutes away from where I live right now, really one of the biggest hot spots in the country, in Queens. Look, it's a function, you know, Glenn, of density, of population, of proximity to people in an area with, you know, 8, 10 million people that struggle to social distance. So I, with a bunch of other former athletes and current athletes, this past week just filmed a public service announcement that'll be televised, just urging people to strictly adhere to the guidelines, to maintain social distancing, and ride this thing out. Look, we've seen it firsthand over many decades when a natural or unnatural phenomena strikes. I know in Houston, I guess the last time was the Hurricane Tornado Harvey. These things happen.
And the floods, too. Yep.
Yeah, and you know, mankind either rises to the occasion or doesn't. This one is unprecedented, and we're fighting it in New York like people all over the country, all over the world are fighting it.
Talking to Shep Messing, he's the broadcaster for the New York Red Bulls as well. Has done World Cups, you name it, he's done it. 2006 FIFA World Cup, and again has. Yeah, played with the legendary players. You've been posting some amazing photos from your career. This one that you posted of Pelé and Eusebio to me was just, I mean, a classic. Tell us about those two men a little bit.
Yeah, that one captured my imagination too. Just to see for your listeners that didn't see it, Glenn, just a photo of Eusebio wearing a Boston Miniman uniform. And Pelé obviously wearing the Cosmos, and it was just sort of, you know, one hand on the neck of the other and during the flow of the game, but, you know, talking to each other. You could just see in the pose in the picture the mutual respect and friendship these guys had for each other, and you're talking about two of the greatest players ever to have played the sport. So for me, and Glenn, you and I know each other a long time. I still pinch myself because I'm a kid that grew up in the Bronx and didn't see a soccer ball until I was 15, 16. And you know, 6, 7 years later, I'm playing for the U.S. at the Olympic Games. And then, you know, I wake up, Eusebio's my teammate, and then Cosmos, Pelé's my teammate, and Beckenbauer. But, you know, back to those two guys. A unique talent, and Eusebio certainly when he came here, by the time he came here, his legs looked like a war zone. The scars, the beating he had taken over the course of his career. And I was playing for the Boston Minutemen, and one day we found out that the two great international Portuguese internationals, Eusebio and Samoas, the midfield general, had signed with the team. And I got to tell you, Glenn, sometimes the greater a player you are, you're even a better person. I got to tell you, Eusebio was the greatest guy in the world. I mean, a fun-loving teammate, worked hard. We used to go to his apartment at night and smoke cigars and drink and play poker. You know, Eusebio loved to play poker, and I'll never forget one night I'm joking with him, and I asked him, hey, man, because women followed him around all over the place, Eusebio. And I said, you know, dude, how long have you been married? He said, I'm married 25 years. I said, well, how'd you stay married? And he drew a little map on the poker table. And imagine him with a cigar, and he had a glass of a whiskey. And he diagrammed it for me on the poker table, and he said, Eusebio go Lisbon, Eusebio go London, wife go London, Eusebio go Paris. Wife go Paris, Eusebio go Boston.
Oh, jeez.
He was the most fun-loving, super friend, super teammate, and even with those legs that were beat up, Glenn, he could hit a ball like a ton of bricks. So
I remember you telling me that his power was remarkable.
Unbelievable. And then I go from Eusebio and I get traded to the New York Cosmos and there's Pelé. So look, what can I say about Pelé that hasn't been said before? But I'll give you two little behind the scenes story that speak to him as an athlete and then one as a guy. As an athlete, they brought him to Brazil and tested him. They ran a battery of physiological tests on him. And I swear, Glenn, he was superhuman. He had a vertical leap that was beyond Michael Jordan. You hold two fingers behind his head, and he had peripheral vision of like 360. So he was a freak of an athlete, just really Superman. And And again, you know Pelé, he's, you know, maybe he's 5 foot eight, 5 foot nine in terms of height. And he was 35 years old. And we're playing, I'll never forget, a game down in Fort Lauderdale, and there's a basketball court on the beach right across from the hotel. And Pelé, you know, I was teaching him. He wanted me to teach him how to play basketball because he had never played. So we go out on the court on the beach, and I show him how to dribble a ball. And he asked me if he's allowed to jump. I said, sure, you could jump. I showed him how to shoot. He said, can I jump? I said, yeah, you could jump. Glenn, he starts jamming one hand behind his back. He's dunking, 35 years old, 5 foot eight. He's dunking, slamming the ball. I mean, he was, you just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, he was just so remarkable. And so you catch his career, too. Now, this is one of the things I want to talk to you about tonight, because the 50th anniversary of the Houston Astrodome, which eighth wonder of the world at the time, you played in there with the Oakland Stompers. Do you remember playing in the Astrodome? Can you give us any sort of recollection of that night playing the Houston Hurricane?
I'll give you a great recollection because, you know, wow. I had just finished, won a championship with Pelé and the Cosmos, 1977. The pinnacle of Pelé's last game. And you know, Glenn, you were in the scene here, and you know, a giant stadium, we're getting 60, 65, 75,000 people a game. We win the championship. I become a free agent. I sign with Oakland. And look, I was a bit of a wild man. So I remember I was all excited to go to Houston and play in the Astrodome. And I had just that year before done a Puma. I was a Puma guy, and I'd done a Puma commercial with the quarterback of the Houston Oilers, Dan Pastorini. So I get to Houston. I get to Houston. I'm at the hotel, and I give Dan a call, and I said, Dan, you know, I'm playing tomorrow in the Astrodome. You know, let's go for dinner or something. So Dan took me out. Glenn, I must have got back at 5 in the morning. I mean, Dan Pastorini, you know, he was a party guy. So I'm out all night with him. I get back at 5 in the morning. I get to the stadium for the game that night, and I'm really, you know, the Astrodome. I think for soccer at the time, the capacity was 45, 50,000 people. And, you know, I'm used to the crowds at Giant Stadium the year before, 75,000 people. I'm expecting a huge crowd, and I get there, and we're ready for kickoff. Glenn, there must have been 3,000 or 4,000 people there. There was nobody there.
Yeah.
But I got psyched up. We had a good game. I think Charlie Marasco scored a goal for us. I got a shutout. We won 1-0, and I went out with Pastorini again. So I had a great time.
By the way, he was recently honored down here by the Houston Sports Award, you know, obviously for playing with the Oilers. But what I wanted to tell people about you, when you made that move from the Cosmos to the Stompers, I believe you became the highest paid American player in the league at $100,000. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct, Glenn. And I never, look, it sounds silly, but I, you know me for a long time, and I was always like many of us, like Smitty and Werner, I was always fighting for the American player, right? There was a long time in the old NASL, and you remember that, Glenn, you were a player too, where, you know, many times the American players got overlooked, you know, for some second or third or fourth division English player because they had an accent. And so, you know, we were fighting for our lives, the American players. To some extent, we still are today. But yes, I had always believed in myself. So I had always signed a contract for 1 year, and I'm a free agent at the end of the contract. So we won the championship with Pelé and Franz and Giorgio, Carlos Alberto, and I was a free agent. So I went to the highest bidder. It was Milan Mandrich out in Oakland. And, you know, I just kind of feel like maybe I helped set a bar in terms of money or credibility or worth. So to the American player, and I had a great year out in Oakland. They didn't last too long, but I had a lot of fun.
Shep Messing joining us here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. By the way, a gentleman called in prior to you coming on, and he said Shep played in Rochester, and I didn't remember that. And I said, well, maybe he did, but I'm not 100% sure. But, Renee, I owe you one because you were correct. Shep did play a season in Rochester. So, Shep, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about kind of what you're doing now in this downtime and what you're realizing. Because I know I'm realizing a lot of different things being home and not having the normal life. So I want to get into that a little bit. I also want to get into your book, The Education of an American Soccer Player. Plus, I saw on Twitter, Zopp and Mark Connolly were hitting us on Twitter for you being on the show tonight. Chris Alexopoulos, our World Cup producer, and Mark Connolly, our great researcher. So we'll get a little fun in with those guys. Sound good?
Sure, Glenn.
All right, we'll take a break here. We're coming back. Shep Messing, New York Cosmos, so many great stories. He's done so many things in his career, player, commentator, agent, you name it. He's done it. Very intelligent guy with some of the best stories going in the league. Outstanding goalkeeper as well. We'll take a break. More to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. More with former New York Cosmos goalkeeper, commentator for ESPN, Fox, many networks, also Olympics for NBC. He's Shep Messing. Shep, you ask for satisfaction in the Rolling Stones. You get satisfaction in the Rolling Stones.
I love it. I'm rocking here. My man, Mick. I like it. Thanks, Glenn.
Now, there was an obvious question I could ask with, you know, about you and Dan Pastorini that night that would play off this song, which I'm not going to ask because I'm just a straight-up guy, okay? But you do
there
have good
go.
Mick Jagger stories. Give us one quick good Mick Jagger story in the Stones.
Well, look, we all know Mick Jagger, and Mick Jagger likes a party, and he loves soccer, he loves football, and he followed the Cosmos. And remember, this is back in the 70s, in the days of Studio 54, so, you know, we'd finish a game at Giant Stadium, 60, 65,000 people in the stands, and we'd come down into the locker room, and Mick Jagger would often be there. And I posed for one picture that I've seen circulated over the years with me on one side. I had no, you know, just taking a shower. I had no shirt on. Stevie Hunt on the other side. Mick Jagger in the middle. And Mick, at that time, he had his head sort of cocked to one side. And he leaned over to me, and he asked me, he said, Shep, what city are we in? I said, Mick, we're in New Jersey, man. We're heading to New York City.
Great,
let's go. So,
that's a
big
one.
Soccer fan. Look, back in those days, you know, Peter Frampton and Elton John, Mick Jagger, many of the rock groups of that era were into the North American Soccer League.
Yeah, no question about it. Shep Messing joining us. So a couple of people have just said to say hello to you. Jim Walker, who was the former GM of the Chicago Sting, was also my GM here in Houston with the Dynamos plural in the 80s in the USL. He says hello to Shep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great man. Still contributing to soccer in the Houston area with his youth club along with Olivier Finidori. Renee Kozarski says, greatest color guy MLS has ever known. That's you.
Wow. Have him place a call into Don Garber for me and ESPN. And that's very nice. Thanks.
He's for that. Yeah, very, very nice. All right, so, you know, look, I've decided that the best thing I can do for my fellow humans is to, you know, obviously social distance and be very disciplined with that. I've been working out, but, you know, when you're home, you realize a lot of different things. And I know that you used to do a lot of surf casting and a lot of fishing out on the island, in the Sound. You know, what are you learning during this time? Because this is kind of unprecedented territory for all of us. And some of us are better at being alone than others.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, look, I'm not a great philosopher, but I can tell you and speak from the heart. I'm sure you feel the same way. You know, first of all, it's the human condition. Kudos to the medical professionals, EMT, the technicians, to the firemen, to the cops, to everybody out there in the workforce that is putting themselves in harm's way, you know, similar to a 9/11, where the firemen and the policemen ran into the burning buildings. Here we have the pandemic, COVID-19, and I have many friends who are doctors right here on Long Island. Those are the guys and women that I did a public service announcement for, and they get up every day and they're going to war, and at their own peril. So, you know, kudos, hats off to them. It kind of, I think, for the human population, it should give everybody a little bit of a mental reset in terms of what's important. There's so many different levels you could talk about it, Glenn, but I've read studies now where the quality of the air, the quality of the oceans and the water, all improving because of a lack of human movement, both in the cars and by foot. So I happen to be very at peace when I'm alone. I'm reading books every day, watching documentaries, and trying to enjoy a peaceful time instead of a time to be afraid. But we all have loved ones, and we all are concerned for them, and thank God all of mine are good right now. And I also have a woman that's a friend who's the chairman of the infectious disease department at a large hospital near me. And I speak to her every day. There's so much misinformation, Glenn, and, you know, the media being what it is today and journalism being what it is, you never know who to believe about anything. So I like to speak to her every couple of days just to get my finger on the pulse of what she's thinking. Obviously, she's in close contact with CDC every day. And, you know, it's a little bit reassuring when I speak to her, Glenn. If reassuring is the right word, there's no right word for this. But she said it's a virus. It's a virus, and until the antibodies are in our systems, until we have the ability to create a vaccine, it's going to dissipate. Is it going to leave its wake of tragedy? Absolutely. But it's not the first time in the history of the planet that there's been a deadly, fatal virus. So she is, you know, measured in her response. They're all working diligently, the scientists, the pharmaceutical, the medical doctors. And this one she keeps telling me is a little tricky because of the way it mutates, because it hasn't been seen before. But we have the best people in the world working on solving it. And all we could do is ride it out.
Talking to Shep Messing, formerly of the New York Cosmos. You know, Shep, with the amount of things you've done, how do you like being introduced? I'm just curious. How does Steve Cangelosi introduce you on MSG? Former New York Cosmos? I'm just curious.
You know what, Glenn?
We could do a lot of things with you. You know that.
No, it's a good question. But, Glenn, you and I are close friends and colleagues, and we work together. We have great respect. We have a great friendship. And you know me, I'm really prefer to be under the radio screen. You know what I mean?
No.
Say, Shep, you know, just say Shep Messing. But look, I'm known, I think, the best as a New York Cosmo. I mean, that was a, you know it well, Glenn, that was a period of time, certainly in America, in North America, that can never be replicated. It was lightning in a bottle where the greatest players in the world ended up playing in a city. And again, I'm not relating it to the COVID-19 virus, but New York in the late 70s needed help. There was a serial killer on the loose, Son of Sam.
Yeah, that's right.
The city was bankrupt. The city was bankrupt. There was a blackout in the city. And sports has the ability to take a city on its shoulders. And we captured the imagination of New York and the country and the world. So, you know, people ask me, Glenn, would I like to be a player today and play in Europe or play, you know, on this current, you know, on New York Red Bulls or LA Galaxy? No, I wouldn't trade the years that I had, the era that I had with those players. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. So the answer, it's a long-winded answer to your question, but that's how I'm known, as the New York Cosmos goalkeeper.
I just remember doing a stand-up with you somewhere, and I almost said, hey, it's Glenn and Shep, you know, because it was always just so relaxed and loose with you, you know, and I almost made that mistake, which I caught myself, but probably
it's not a mistake. That's
they would have said they, somebody out there would have said, "Hey, who the is Glenn?" And we know this guy Shep. yeah. How about your last name? But I wanted you to just touch on the NASL at that time, because there was great pressure on you as an American. But the way the league was set up, there was only a couple of Americans that had to be fielded, you know, in a lineup and be on the field at all times. Just explain that to my listeners, because a lot of my listeners are younger. They don't know the NASL era.
Yeah, no, when I speak for the American player, we were fighting for our lives to make the team and to, you know, be on the roster crack the starting lineup. But the regulation at that time was every team out of your 11 in the starting lineup, you had to have three American citizens, either born here or naturalized citizens. So usually in those days, it was a goalkeeper and two defenders. In my case, it was myself in goal and Smitty and Werner Ross, two Hall of Famers, in the back four. But it was tough for the American player, because the perception was, even if you were a third division English player, that you're better than the American player, and that was really just not the case. We had players like, I mean, the list could go on and on, Steve Moyers, Kyle Rote, and,
yeah.
I mean, so many, you know, really talented American players. But it was hard. It was hard to crack the lineup. And look, I think it goes to young players. The advice I always got, Glenn, from Gordon Bradley, who you knew, and that advice would be to a young player today. Gordon's advice to me, and especially to Smitty and Werder, was, look, you got to fight like heck to get in the starting 11. And once you get in the starting 11, don't ever let anybody take your spot. And that goes for players today. You got to fight like crazy and work like crazy to make the team, to get in the starting 11. And once you do, well, now you better hold on to that spot. And you know, that's what we did. And look, at the time, Glenn, we didn't feel like we were pioneers, but in retrospect, you know, I look at Major League Soccer today and in their 25th year and where the league is at, and I take a little bit of credit, all of us who were in the NASL, you know, 40 years ago.
No, no question about it. Well, Shep, listen, this has been an amazing, great opportunity. You've taken me away here tonight. It's been great just talking to you. I feel like you're sitting across in the room here. Thank you so much for all of this and coming on tonight. And, you know, we will have to give Zop, our producer, we're going to have to give Zop a call and find out what he's up to.
Listen, Zap, we heard from Zap on Twitter. I hopped through Twitter, and I said, Zap said, hey, it's the guy who stole the bagel. And I said, can I use his name? And Zap never answered me, so
That is a story for another day. I hope Zop listened tonight, because that's why I wanted him to know we appreciated all his great work. And Zop is one of the high-end guys at ESPN as a producer. So thanks, Zop.
Salt to the earth, Zop. Yep.
Salt to the earth. One of the best. And so are you, Shep. Thank you so much again for coming on. Take care of yourself. Stay safe, please.
You too, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Shep Messing, man. You know, you could do 2 hours with him. You could do 2 hours. I mean, the Dante Pastorini story here in Houston for the Astrodome, fantastic. I mean, that brings in a different audience right there. All right, we'll take a break. It's Pearl Jam, another legend coming up. J.P. Della Camera, the iconic broadcaster, coming up next.
She said I'm ready for you.
ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. The talented Victor Ariza, part of the Soccer Matters staff, just reminded me, go to glenndavissoccer.com. If you want to tie in tonight's show, there's a list of Ramirez Dynamo goals there. Other articles, the nephew interview on the Astrodome, and Light It Up Blue. So get there. Big thanks to Advantage BMW Midtown and our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. They get soccer on the airwaves and gives us the opportunity to visit. Well, this guy is the standard bearer when it comes to play-by-play announcers in the history of the sport in this country. No question. Elected to the Hall of Fame. Some of the most iconic calls in U.S. soccer history. And, of course, 25 straight years calling Major League Soccer. Glad to call him a friend. He's J.P. Della Camera. He joins us now. How are you, J.P.?
I'm doing, Glenn. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Are you you're not doing any coffee this late, are you?
No. You're the coffee champion. I might be a runner-up, but my last cup is usually early afternoon. Otherwise, no, I wouldn't be able to sleep.
Let me tell you something. You have to talk to Mark Connolly, your great friend, who's a tremendously talented researcher. He will tell you that he has been amazed at how far I've cut back on my coffee. I think it's because a producer, Todd Kulish, yelled at me when I was over-caffeinated.
That could happen. Happens to the best
believe,
of us, right?
I got a better grip on it now, though, so... I'm waking up without coffee these days anyways. So first of all, I just want to check in with you. How are you doing? How's your family doing? And just kind of get the lay of the land that way.
Well, luckily, fortunately, I say my family's doing great. I know of some people that are not, and my heart bleeds for them. I know someone that lost a couple of people and could have lost two more due to this coronavirus. While you and I are talking about this, I'm sure it's the same where you are, Glenn, but... You know, our doctors, our nurses, our military personnel, the volunteers, they have done an exceptional job here. And I think people are starting to appreciate more what these people do.
Yeah, shouldn't they be our new norm of real heroes? Honestly, I hope we don't lose that.
Absolutely. Yes.
We can't miss that opportunity with this, because you're right. It's pretty ridiculous. We actually lost a great friend today who hadn't woken up in 2.5 weeks, a man named Bill Cohen from the Westchester area. He was in the White Plains Hospital, just one of the greatest guys ever, and absolutely has broken my family's heart. Let's get back to broadcasting and kind of your career, and just take me through, like, where did your influence come to become a play-by-play announcer? You know, was it listening to somebody else? How did that happen?
No, it was actually when growing up in Boston, people would have assumed I might have been a baseball or Red Sox fan, but I really wasn't. I grew up when Bobby Orr and Phil Esposito were the Boston Bruins, and they were winning Stanley Cups, and all their games were on TV, and the old Boston Garden was packed. You know, back in those days, the New England Patriots, who were really the kings of the Boston area, they were really nothing. They were the Boston Patriots and ran through a bunch of different owners and didn't sell out. Boston Celtics were winning championships, and they weren't selling out. They were always for sale. The Bruins were a stable franchise, and my first love was really hockey. And my thought about getting into sports broadcasting started in Boston as a young person following the Bruins.
Yeah, and you went on to do NHL as well, which is pretty amazing. I mean, at that time when you were starting off doing hockey, did you ever imagine you're going to really blaze the path for play-by-play guys in the sport of soccer?
No, it never would have occurred to me. Never would have dawned on me. I think, though, at a young age, maybe college age, I fell in love with soccer. I watched some of it on the old NASL when Pele first came over here. I think it was ABC that was broadcasting the games. But I think when you saw the skill level of someone like Pele and your previous guest, Shep Messing, you know, the Cosmos were great back then, and that was my first real love for soccer, probably, was watching those Cosmos games and listening to Jim Karvelas and Seamus Mallon. And at that point, I probably still didn't know that I would become a soccer guy. That didn't happen until probably the early 80s, and it started actually with indoor soccer, not outdoor.
Jim Karvelas and Seamus Mallon, boy, do I remember them. They were great. They were both excellent. We're talking to J.P. Della Camera, a 25-year veteran of Major League Soccer. He's seen it all. And you've had some of the most iconic – you have had the most iconic calls in U.S. soccer history. Paul Caligiuri to qualify the U.S. for the 90 World Cup in Italy. And then we go to the save by Brianna Scurry as the women won that infamous 99 World Cup. Which one of the two generally gets the edge when people talk to you?
Wow, tough question. I never pick one, Glenn, but those are the two iconic moments. Whenever I'm called upon to make a speech, those are the two that I hit. Ironically, I probably remember more about the 99 game than I do the one in 89, and not because of the years, but I think in 1989, it was more about the experience that I remember. I can remember vividly that when we went around Trinidad, that people had painted their cars red. They painted their houses red, you know, the national colors of Trinidad and Tobago. I mean, this is a big deal there. The government had declared a national holiday, expecting their team to at least get a draw, which would have qualified them for the World Cup, and it didn't happen. I can remember going to the stadium like 4 hours early, because if I didn't, even though I had a credential, I would not have gotten in. There were scalping tickets. There were Confederate or counterfeit tickets that were out there. Estimates ranged that day by about 20,000 in terms of what the actual count was on that day. And the Caligiuri goal itself, Glenn, I remember it more from watching it whenever there's an anniversary than I actually remember it from my call on that day, because I think it came from out of nowhere. We didn't know how big that goal was going to be. And you know this from broadcasting, too, that when people ask you, you know, what were you thinking then? You're not really thinking then. You know, you're in the moment, right? You know, I know that if Chastain scores, they win the World Cup, right? But I don't think that, wow, this call or this game, it's going to live on forever. You're not thinking about that. You don't even appreciate it probably until, you know, certainly hours later at a minimum, days later maybe, and then I'll go so far as to say years later. And sometimes if I watch a game back, I'll end up appreciating it more because now you remember that it's lasted this long in people's memories, that this was a big deal. This was an iconic game.
Yeah, and my apologies. I said Brianna Scurry save, which set up Brandi Chastain with that remarkable penalty that would win it. Boy, she's had to talk about that penalty a few times, huh?
Several times, actually. And You know, the thing that people forget about that is that all the U.S. players made their penalty kicks. Even Mia Hamm, who back then didn't really like to take penalties, made hers. You know, that was clutch. They didn't miss. You know, Brandy gets credit. She was the last kicker to step up, and she makes it, you know. And probably then, she doesn't know either how big that penalty kick was. But, you know, years and years and years later, people are still talking about it. You know, there have been documentaries made about it. There have been commercials where that is played over and over again. You know, Brandy's done much better than Paul when you think about it in terms of visibility and endorsements, right? I mean, Brandy's probably done very well in her career off of that goal. And Caligiuri probably never gets enough attention because it happened, you know, farther back, 10 years earlier than that moment. And so many things have happened on the men's side since then. We've qualified for so many World Cups since then. And a lot of people don't remember it as much because it was not a World Cup goal. It was a World Cup qualifying goal.
Got us back in a World Cup after a long absence in 90 in Italy. We're talking to the legendary broadcaster, JP Della Camera. Okay, so if we take out the 99 Women's World Cup win, we take out the Caligiuri qualifying win that gets the U.S. to the World Cup, I think of moments where I've called games in El Salvador or Guatemala or Germany or Mexico. These are memories that will never leave my mind. Where after those two would you find one of your international calls and kind of unique environments?
I don't remember the call, Glenn, or the score, but I remember thinking what a great experience this was calling a game in Cuba, a World Cup qualifier, when at that time, you know, Americans were not allowed to travel to Cuba. We only went there because it was a World Cup qualifier and we had sanctioning by the U.S. government. And Cuba was a fascinating place. You know, we thought that maybe they didn't like Americans. You know, they didn't like leadership in America or in their own country. But they, Americans, they thought we were great. So we had no issues at all in Cuba. You know, if you open your eyes, if you closed your eyes and then you open them, you know, in certain settings in Cuba, you would think you were in a fantastic West Coast city or a Floridian city, maybe. I mean, it was gorgeous in some places of Cuba. I think that setting I remember probably more because no one had gone to Cuba before us. So I think that one for sure. But if you're talking about games, I think that 2015 Women's World Cup final, when Carly Lloyd had that brilliant performance and the U.S. beat Japan, and that game, that final also set, broke viewership records that were set in 1999. That's a memorable one, too, because the U.S. women had not won since 1999. So that was a big memory, too. And I think another one was 2010. Tommy Smith and I were doing it for ESPN Radio. We did the World Cup final, and on that day, Nelson Mandela came out, the late Nelson Mandela, in what was his last public appearance. We were told he was pretty much on his deathbed at that time, wasn't making any trips anywhere, and he comes out in a golf cart, and he goes around the stadium, and people are standing and applauding, and it gave you chills because you saw the love that country had for this man. And we would never have experienced that anywhere else, but there we were in South Africa and could never forget that. And then I think it was months after that, maybe several months, when Mandela finally passed away. But it's something that you would never forget. It was a very chilling moment.
JP, what a great way to end this interview tonight. We're up on a hard break. It's the end of the show. Listen, thank you so much for coming on. You're going to have to come on again, though, because we've had on Dwight Burgess. We've had some guys that have, you know, 25 years since the beginning of MLS been calling games. Dave Johnson, all these colleagues of yours. But we need to get you back on because we need you to kind of talk to aspiring broadcasters at some point. All right.
Anytime.
That work
anytime,
for you?
Anytime, Glenn. Yeah, anytime.
All right.
Anytime.
All right, JP. You too. Thank you so much. Tremendous interview there with JP De La Camera, Shep Messing, Christian Ramirez. Good night on the show tonight. I hope all of you have enjoyed it. Big thanks to Nick Sciarra. Also, Andrew Carlson, Victor Ariza. We thank those. GlennDavisSoccer.com. We are up and running over there. Daily blogs. Want you to go check it out. Twitter, GlennDavisSoc. Facebook, Soccer Matters. And then Instagram, GlennDavisSoc. Sorry for all the shameful promotion, but we got to do it. So hope you enjoy the show here tonight. For Nick Sciarra, I'm Glenn Davis. Thank you very much for tuning in. And remember, the podcast at podcastarena.com, also on iTunes. Tomorrow night, we get it done in Austin, Texas, on the Horn. So a big thank you again to everybody for tuning in tonight. Stay safe, social distance, wash the hands, honor those that are on the front lines for us. Good night, everyone.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location. Lowe's knows you don't want to sacrifice reliability for savings. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select LG appliances and purchase two or three select major appliances to get an additional 10% off. Save big on LG, America's most reliable line of home appliances at Lowe's. Based on independent reliability surveys 2021 to 2024 and select major appliances as compared to competing manufacturers offering full appliance lines. See associate for more details. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Exclusions apply. Valid 6/18 through 7/9.